Hey everybody, what's going on? Josh Wigler here, introducing you to a brand new podcast here in the Post Show Recaps universe that I have no involvement in whatsoever other than these words and being a big fan of the people who are bringing it to you and being a fan of some of the material they are going to cover, not all of it. Dedicated listeners of the Everything is Super podcast, which is our podcast mostly covering Marvel stuff, but superheroes writ large. Kevin Mahadeo, my co-host on that podcast, has long threatened, I do say threatened, to podcast about the Twilight saga for whatever reason. Dude loves Twilight, and well, he's making good on the threat. This is something that he has warned us about for many moons, many new moons, in fact, and it is finally here in the form of YA, which is a new podcast in the Post Show Recaps universe covering young adult fiction, starting with Twilight. Kevin is hosting this alongside Melissa Woodward, who was Kevin's podcast co-host on the Mighty Ducks Game Changers podcast that we did for the patrons of Post Show Recaps. They're an incredible team together. They are going to have a lot of really fun takes about YA material and Twilight specifically as they started out. This is the first episode of that podcast series, which is going to be an exclusive for the patrons of Post Show Recaps, but we wanted to get you this episode in the main feed so that you could hear what they've got going on and then make the decision for yourself. You're like, hey, I've been thinking about it. Been thinking about signing up at patreon.com/postshowrecaps, but you know, I just don't know. Maybe it's Twilight that shall push you over the edge. I think it's a really fun podcast. They've got a really strong idea behind the premise, and they're incredible together, Kevin and Melissa. So we're going to give it to you here in the main feed. You can take a listen. This can either be something that you just listen to the one time, you're like, oh, that's fun, but I'm good. Or you're like, okay, this is it. I'm doing it. I'm taking the plunge. Patreon.com/postshowrecaps. It's the start of the month anyway, which as Wiggler always says, best time to sign up, start of the month. It's true. That's when Patreon charges you. They charge you as soon as you sign up. So you start at the start of the month and you get a full month bang for your buck. It's a really great deal. Anyway, enough huckstering from me. I'm really excited about the podcast. I'm really excited for you to listen to it. This is the first episode of YA, which I'm so bad at saying. Kevin and Melissa are much better at it. Hope you enjoy the show.
Peeta or Gale? Which faction is the best faction? What exactly is a paper town? The world of young adult fiction often leaves us with a lot of questions. But me and my Canadian co-host are here to answer the biggest one, which is, of course, why, eh? That's right. This is the YA podcast from Post Show Recaps, where every week, me, Kevin Mahadeo, and my incredible co-host, Melissa Woodward.
Hey.
Are going to be talking about YA fiction. That's right. This is a brand new podcast coming out. And this one is hitting the main feed, actually, to give you guys a taste of what we'll be doing here on this brand new show, which will move into patron only. So if you love this, which why wouldn't you, sign up for the Post Show Recaps patron at patreon.com/postshowrecaps. At the $5 level gets you access to this incredibly fun podcast that we're kicking off here. As mentioned, we'll be talking about all sorts of young adult fiction, mostly the movies, but we'll be touching on the books as we go through them. And of course, prior to this, you can also get our Mighty Ducks podcast, where Melissa and I first did our podcasting together and kind of spawned how this was going to end up. Because along with the Mighty Ducks, Melissa and I found out we're pretty big fans of YA, right? You're a big YA person, Melissa.
Yeah, it turns out that that was the running thread. Because basically, I feel like this friendship partnership started because we would like rant past each other in the Discord a lot. Like there was a lot
I love the idea of rant past each other.
Yeah. You know, we both have a lot of feelings about a lot of these types of shows. And at first we were like, oh, we both really love the Mighty Ducks. And then the more we got to talking, it was like, oh, but we also have a lot of shared love for a lot of these franchises that happen to center around the stories of teenagers and other young adults. And it was interesting that we had a lot of shared loved media, but not necessarily always the same takes about that media. So I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, like, young adult is so interesting. And this is coming from us who, yes, we're older now, but, you know, obviously I've been reading young adult for a very long time. It's hard to really even pinpoint, like, where I got started with it. I just feel like it was always a thing. Like, I remember as a kid reading, you know, Ender's Game is a good example. Like, obviously, I mean, there's gonna be a lot of talk about, like, authors in this and where they are now. But Ender's Game, I remember reading right alongside, like, Of Mice and Men. So as I'm reading, like, classic American lit, I'm also reading, like, fantasy young adults, especially, like, The Giver is a classic example. So I was reading a lot of that stuff growing up. And then it was always a part, I think, of my reading experience. But the big one, of course, was, like, I think Harry Potter, right? Like, I was in high school by the time that hit, and my younger sister, which I guess we might as well say this now. Here's the deep, dark secret of our podcast. Deep, dark secret that we found out. My younger sister, named Melissa, as we discovered.
My younger brother, named Kevin.
Yup, that's right, that's right. We share the same sibling names. So that's weird. But she was really into Harry Potter. And I remember her bugging me to read it. And me being at that time, like, you know, teenager and the older brother, I was like, get out of here, nerd. I'm not going to read your Harry Potter. And then the movie was coming out and my friends were all into it and they wanted to see it. So I was like, all right, I'm going to read the book. So I borrowed my sister's book and I just blitzed through at that time, I think, 3 books that were out. And the fourth one hit soon afterwards. And that sort of, like, kicked me back heavy into young adult. And I've been reading a lot of it since. There's just something really interesting about it, like a shared experience. Because as much as obviously the fantasy stuff is there, it's really about, like, that teenage life. And, like, we were going through it at the time. We remember it still. It's like this weird, like, I think, throwback reminiscence nostalgia, right? Like that kind of bonds us to it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot going on. And it's really interesting when you think about this type of media and why people in their 30s still really love it. And I think it is this, I think the nostalgia piece is part of it. But I also think that as two people who are very heavily involved in D&D, I think we're both people that are really big fans of character stories. And there's so much potential there when someone starts as a kid, as a teenager, right? Like, there's so much left to be defined about who that person is going to become and all the challenges they're going to face along the way and, you know, how they're going to shape out and what sorts of decisions they're going to make. And I think that there's so much potential there for young adult literature that it's really fun to stay in that world, experience that nostalgia, but also get to see those really big changes in a character. I think that that's really fun and something that I'm really drawn to in stories.
It's also, like, just for me, I think it just reminds me of a time, right, where it's just like, oh, my life was so ahead of me. I had, like you said, so many choices to be made. Who knew what the world was going to be? Obviously, now in my 30s, that is very different. My world and choices have been made. But it's really interesting to go back to that and experiencing the emotions, right? You talk about character, and young adult has a lot of that. It's arguably the most character-driven of fiction. Next to, like, I guess, like, typical, like, what's considered just, you know, like, literature, right? Like, which debatable too when it comes to character. But young adult is all about that because it's about teenagers who are just so full of emotion that they don't know what to do with themselves. And that really just comes spilling out onto the page, and delving into that is really fascinating, really interesting. And putting them in such odd settings, I think young adult and fantasy go hand in hand. And of course, fantasy is expansive. And that's the one thing I really like with young adult, is that it introduces people, especially at a young age, and even older people who haven't experienced it, what fantasy can be. Because I also love fantasy a lot. And people always think fantasy is like high fantasy, right? Like, not just D&D style, not just Tolkien elves and dwarves, but, like, you know, high fantasy, like, Game of Thrones is actually low, but I'm trying to, like, anything by like Patrick Rothfuss's Kingkiller has a lot of it. Brandon Sanderson, extremely so, you know, Robert Jordan. That's what people think. But fantasy can be anything. Like, you have a lot of urban fantasy. You have a lot of modern day fantasy. I mean, Harry Potter is fantasy, but it has a lot of magic, but still takes place in, like, modern day London.
there's such an expansive breadth of it. And like with anything, some is good, and some is bad.
And this is the thing, right? Bad. Yeah, young adult gets crapped on a lot. And I think that I think it's fair, right? Like, not every adult is going to pick up one of these books and see themselves on the page and feel that connection to that character. You know, it's not necessarily work that is going to challenge you intellectually, although it can, I think. You know, it can really put you in some situations and make you think about, oh, how do I deal with this kind of moral dilemma this character is challenged with? I think that that's very possible. But I don't know. I also think that reading is allowed to just be fun, right? Like, this is a thing that I really struggled with. I have a PhD, and so I spent a very long time.
Way to brag.
I knew that was coming. I'm actually trying to insult myself. I spent a very long time in school. I only graduated from post-secondary education in my 30s. I spent a very long time trying to figure out what I was going to do. And it meant that I never read for fun for like a very extended period of time. And I got to the point where I missed it so much. And the only books that I could really handle were these young adult fantasy books. And I started reading Sarah J. Maas and Leigh Bardugo and Tomi Adeyemi and, you know, all of these current day young adult fantasy authors that I just devoured their stuff. And it was escapist. But also, like, the characters are going through real problems and making real life decisions. And, you know, there were twists and turns that I didn't see coming. A lot of them are very funny. The humor in young adult fantasy and young adult in general, just, you know, I've definitely been reading and, like, laughing out loud at things that are going on. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's what you said about young adult gets crapped on is so accurate, because like the ones that get highlighted usually end up being like sometimes the like not great ones or the bad ones, but there's some incredible young adult out there. And it's weird because fiction just has all these genres and dedications and like what belongs where and cataloging. But like, it's odd what separates like young adult from like just like new adult as a thing, which is basically slightly older than young adult, and they just deal with slightly more mature themes sometimes. And like, what like classifies young adult is often like vague. Like, it's not really there. Technically speaking, like, I just mentioned Patrick Rothfuss, right? Like, the Kingkiller Chronicles, there's nothing in there that to me is just like, a young adult can't read this. They, of course, can. So it's odd, like, what gets classified there. Especially, there's some that are just so incredibly well-written. For the ones that, like, a lot of them, like you said, are written well, there's some that are just beautiful, like poetry almost. And I don't even normally like poetry, but it's the best way to describe how the writing is. One of my favorite books, full stop, is a young adult book, Before I Fall by Lauren Oliver. I adore that book. I love that book a lot. I think the premise is interesting. It hooked me because it's that Mean Girls meets Groundhog's Day is what it's classified as. And that's what hooks me. But it's so much more than that. And the emotional journey of the character is really great because it is a deep character study. And the way Lauren Oliver writes is phenomenal. I really love her style, how she describes things. She's really phenomenal with metaphor and simile. So like, that's a great example where it's one of my favorite books and it's young adult. And I think that's what people often miss, right, about this genre, is the breadth of it. And of course, as we talk about our love of young adult, and we're going to talk about a lot of these different ones, we're going to go all over the place.
Yeah, I think we're going to talk about the good and the bad, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, like you were saying, there's some really heavy stuff in young adult. Like, I basically define young adult as your main characters are, you know, under 21. Yeah. We'll say, as you know, for the Americans listening. and I, you know, like, read Parable of the Sower by Octavia Butler, The Hate You Give by Angie Thomas, right? Like, these are serious,
yes,
heavy works that happen to have teenagers as their main character. Yeah. But I don't think you can read, you know, a book on impending climate crisis and be like, yeah, no, this is just like a frivolous teen drama because she like happens to, you know, also fall in love in, during, you know, spoiler alert. I didn't tell you which one I'm talking about, but you'll figure it out.
I mean, if it's young adult most of the time, it's all
they usually fall in love. Mm. And so, you know, there's some like really incredible books here. And I think that it's really interesting because it often ends up being this like secret shame for people. Like people will like secretly watch one of these things. And I have a stat here that approximately 55% of young adult readers are adults.
Yep.
Like we are in the Believe majority. It. So, and you know, some of that might be people buying books for children. You know, those stats are kind of hard to deal with. But I think that largely the market is actually targeted at us. It's not really necessarily targeted at teenagers.
And there is something I think to it, because it's like once you're when you're going through it, it's hard to see the forest for the trees, right? Like when you're a teen, you can definitely connect to certain characters. You can definitely get it. But it's hard to really connect with everything because you're going through what a lot of these characters are going through in the moment. And your choices might differ. But when you're an adult, you can really look back and see a lot of the things you may have dismissed at the time and understand better now. A great example for that for me is actually the fifth Harry Potter book. I remember people really not liking it. I remember me not liking it that much because he was just like this little punk in that one. Like he was so emotional and he was so, you know, just going through stuff and I didn't like it. And then as I got older and I realized, oh, that's just exactly how I was at the time. I was just like, you know, I don't want to, you know, just drop a swear word immediately, but a little blank. You know, it's the same. I have this greater appreciation for that fifth book now because it's just, I understand exactly why it hit the way it did but at the time and why I like it now, because it really encompasses what my, I mean, I had a lot of hormones, right? Like that's what happened. Harry had a lot of hormones at that point in time and it translated to the page. It was really well captured. So that, you know, there's a lot in there that I think works to why adults can connect to it. And as I said, we're going to... Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, and I think that context is really interesting, right? It's why we like to reread this stuff, too. So, you know, a lot of the stuff that I started reading, you know, you shouted out a few of the authors that you started reading. So my big stuff was Tamora Pierce and her Alanna series. Like, I read because I was a young girl growing up in the 90s. Yeah. I read a lot of, like, female heroine disguises herself as a man so that she can compete with the boys and do better than all of them anyway. Like that was what we thought feminism was in the 90s, right?
Right,
so that,
yeah.
That was a lot of what I read growing up. And it was, you know, anything you can do, I can do better was like how I grew up. And I, you know, I don't hate it. It's there were worse things that I could have been reading. But, you know, Redwall books, The Giver, like you mentioned, was a huge one that I read a lot. And it's funny to read those books now and think about, oh, like I was reading this and just like kind of enjoying it for the story, but now I can read it and look at it with that bigger context of my life as an adult. And I think there's a couple things that kind of also make this young adult genre stick out. There's this, I saw it in some of the reading I was doing preparing for this podcast, but this idea of the intensity of the first time you experience something. Mm. And you do that as a teenager way more often than you do as an adult. There's so many firsts and they're so big and emotionally impactful, like you were saying, all the emotion of these teens, but it's because they're experiencing the world for the first time.
Yeah.
And not yet cynical and experienced and, you know, they haven't had their hearts broken yet. So they're still very open to all of that. And then that first heartbreak is so emotional.
Huge.
You know, they're dealing
it's
with
impactful.
All of that.
Yeah, and it's that's the going back to it again, even for us adults, right? Because it's like we read it and we remember what it was like for us to go through our first heartbreak. And yeah, now, you know, for you can grow cold to it or whatever, but like that emotion was there. It's true, it's real, and it is so powerful because you never had it before. You never felt like a huge crush before, you know? And you take that, you take those emotions and put them into a setting that's like crazy where there's different districts all competing against, you know, each other for food.
For fights to the death. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, man, it takes the emotion and you just crank it up to like 20. And it's intense and it's really fascinating and really interesting. It can make some dynamic stuff. And while this isn't the first book we're covering, like success on that can vary, right? You know? You ask me, I think some parts of that book are really strong, but like, you know, other parts, not as much. But like, that's the way it goes with young adults sometimes. And, you know, not to say that we'd never talk about that one. We're gonna, we can't not talk about we'll just say Hunger Games. that's huge. And we're going to plan on doing a lot of stuff, right? Like, that's the idea. That's the hope and the dream. As long as we're wanting to do this, and then more importantly, as long as listeners are hopefully listening, which will be the case, we want to cover, like, the Hunger Games. We're probably going to talk about Harry Potter, yeah. We're going to talk about, like, a John Green book. We're going to hit Shadow and Bone, especially the relevancy.
Definitely going to talk Shadow and Bone.
We'll be talking about that. You know, those things are going to come. Those things are going to be big ones we want to talk about and we're going to continue with. But the one we're going to start with is one that I am really, really excited about. And I know some people probably are just like, oh, God, why are you starting with this one? And is this just going to be crapping on it and yada, yada, yada? I mean, kind of maybe mostly ish. But the thing we're kicking this off with, right, the ones that we're going to be doing first is, of course, the Twilight franchise. And if anyone has listened to me podcast before on post show recaps, if anyone is already a patron at the $10 level and part of the Discord, you have heard me talk about Twilight, and my journey of Twilight has been wild, which we'll get to in a second, to say the least. But the reason why I think we're starting with Twilight is we talk about Harry Potter as this huge impactful thing, but so was Twilight. It is arguably one of the most impactful things in young adult in recent history. It really changed and the landscape in a way that not a lot has. You know, Hunger Games, of course, had its spawns. Hunger Games is successful. But Twilight, I remember one day in like a 1 to 2 day period, I was in a Barnes and Noble looking at the bookshelves. And literally the very next day, there was four, like, you know, those four big shelves, not just like each row, like four across the way, big shelves called Teen Paranormal Romance.
Which
suddenly became a section, and it had all these books. And I was like, what is this? How did this happen? And that is the Twilight effect. It changed young adult forever. So it really has a place that needs to be discussed. You can't ignore Twilight at all.
And I think a lot of the disdain that we talk about towards young adult, like, unfortunately, Twilight is the franchise that people think about, right? Like, I think a lot of adults kind of appreciate what Harry Potter is. They don't, like, poo-poo it in the same way. But Twilight gets so much grief. And I think that when people are thinking about, like, bad young adult, it's the first thing that pops into your mind, which is huge. Like, there's a lot of young adult fiction out there, and this made waves like nothing else ever did. And it's, or, you know, at least within my memory of consuming this media for, you know, decades. And I think it's interesting that I don't think either of us are talking about this because we, like, absolutely see no merit in this media in any way, right? Like, I think that there's parts of this franchise that we enjoy, and that's why, like, we've both watched it and read the books and stuff. Yeah. And so I think it's really interesting to have read them and then now look critically at it and think, okay, you know, why do people have all these associations with this franchise? Why do some people really love it? Why do people shame watch it? Why do people really hate on it? And so I'm really excited to talk about it.
Yeah. And we're going to be hitting on pretty much all those feelings and topics, because, like, where I started off, you know, with Twilight is really fascinating. So let's go origin story here. For me, this was, man, 2007, maybe 2008. And I, at the time, worked at, if you know anything about Josh and I, we worked at a magazine. And this was before Josh came along, but I was working at Wizard Magazine. And we would do these shows, these conventions, Wizard World. And at our booth, we would have this giant wheel, right? Like a prize wheel. And the way it worked is that you would spin the wheel and, you know, you'd get a prize. But in order to win the prize, you had to ask us, like, one of them is like, you know, like, your choice. You would give us a franchise or a nerdy thing, like a topic. You tell us the topic, and we would have to ask you a trivia question about the topic. And, you know, you get it right, you win. And obviously that stacks it for the person playing, but that was the idea. And so I remember one show specifically, I was there, and so many people kept picking Twilight. Like, oh, Twilight. And I was just like, what is this thing? I've never heard of it. And so they keep asking about it. I didn't really know anything about it. One of the other people there knew enough to be asking questions. And so we just throw out like almost like the same one or two or three questions over and over again. And I was just confused about all of it. And eventually I just asked someone, I was just like, what is Twilight? Like, everyone keeps asking about this thing. And they're like, oh, well, do you like vampires? And my immediate response was just like, yes, very much so.
Course.
I do love vampires. Like, they're a huge thing for me. Vampire films were like me growing up, like my thing. The Lost Boys is one of my favorite ones in the top one spot. Right next to it is Let the Right One In, which is a huge contrast into what those two things could be, but also deals with topics about being young adults. Very much so. Those actually fit that mold hilariously. And so I was like, of course, like vampires. Like, this is one of the best vampire things I've had like recently. And so excuse me, I immediately after the show was like, I gotta just go pick this thing up, because everyone was hyping it. Every person who I was talking to about Twilight was hyping it. So I went, I bought the book immediately, only knowing it's about vampires. And now what I should have noticed at the time probably was that the people who brought up Twilight to me were a very specific demographic, did not click in my brain at all. And so I started reading Twilight, knowing nothing. And it had to have been like 20 pages in or something that I was like, what am I reading? What's happening? And understand, at this point, I'm like mid to early 20s. Not the right demo at all. And just, I was so confused. And that's when I looked up reviews a little bit about it, and I was like, oh no, what did I get myself into? But I at the time too was like one of those people was like, where I start a book, I'm gonna finish this book. Yeah, it took me a while but I finished that first book, and it was insane. Like, that was a point where like I was like, this is so bad. And it became like almost like a stance as like an obnoxious early 20 person, right? Like, this is my stance. I care about reading. This book is garbage. It's going to ruin people. And like, I was just so anti-Twilight. And that said, I ended up still reading the second book. And I read most of the third and then skimmed a lot of the fourth, reading the parts that I really cared about. Because at that point, too, I was just like, well, I need to know. It's like if you're going to argue a topic, you need to know the subject. And so that was what I told myself. And to an extent, that is why, yep. I think I originally did it, right? But as I've gotten older, and especially now, and watching the movies, really the movies, I was like, these movies are so bad. But there's a point where I feel like it came 180, and it was probably, honestly, Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 4, or Part 2.
Part 4, like, can you imagine?
Yeah, Part 4. I mean, I can, and maybe. That, like, my brain finally fit into place, into, like, where I was on this Twilight franchise and where I remain today. And it's honestly that Twilight, to me, is a beautiful train wreck. Like, that's the best way to describe it, because there's so much wrong with it. There's so many things wrong and so many problematic things that we will be discussing. But it did a lot. It changed the genre. It got a lot of people who normally don't read fantasy and stuff like this to read. The pros and cons of it are obviously there, but it's really interesting. And for me, and as we'll be discussing heavily the movies, boy, oh boy, those movies, like, man, oh man, there is some hilarious joy to be found in there. And I think that's what I mean about that beautiful train wreck, because there's something incredible that happened in the films.
Yeah, I think my story is probably pretty similar to yours. Like, it was around that 2008 period when that first movie came out, and the timeline has gotten mushy over years, but probably the first movie came out and I was like, oh, I should read whatever this is. And I remember similarly, I had like a 45 minute train ride commute to my job that I had at the time. And I remember like shame reading these books on the train, like trying to like hide what I was reading because the random strangers around me might know what I was reading. And I totally had this argument of, well, if I'm going to critique it, I should at least know what I'm talking about.
Right. So,
because I was going in with that mindset of, you know, I know this is trash. Let me be educated on the ways in which it's trash, which was 100% a cover for me just enjoying this fluffy story about vampires and werewolves. Like, I'm not kidding myself anymore. Like, I just enjoy turning off my brain and reading these books. Like, they don't, not everything you do has to be challenging. Some things can just be fun, and these books are just stupid fun.
They very much are. And, like, yeah, what about the movies? When did you come into the movies is the big question. How did you first feel about them?
I think I watched every single one probably as they came out. I don't remember ever seeing any of them in theaters. I think that that was probably a step too far, that I was like not willing to like physically show my face in front of other people. But I, again, would like shame watch it online somehow and, you know, hide from everybody that I had watched all of this. And I used to, when I was like really deep in university and I just needed like background noise, there was totally a period of time where I just put up the Twilight movies and would just rewatch them as like random, you know, background noise of what was going on. So I have seen them like more than once. I'm not gonna lie to anybody here.
Oh,
like
I have
read and watched these books and movies multiple times. And my kind of big switch was that I was a real jerk about Kristen Stewart in these movies. And I have a lot of issues with Bella as a character. We can get into that as we go through the series.
And I'm sure we will.
I think I've told you the story already. When Charlie's Angels came out, I sent an apology text to a friend of mine who had a crush on Kristen Stewart growing up, saying, I get it now. Like, mm-hmm. I understand. I also now have a crush on Kristen Stewart. Like, I get it. And I, you know, I've listened to interviews and stuff. Like, I think she's like a good actor. Like, I don't think that she had great material to work with in this franchise. And yeah, so that was the other kind of big switch that I had to do, was recognizing that the actors in this movie maybe have greater potential than what they were allowed to show.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the big two for me are going to be like Kristen Stewart and Robert Pattinson, which we'll be talking about, I'm certain, especially as we go. But Kristen Stewart, I remember when she was like younger, I'd seen a number of the movies she was in, right? Like obviously Panic Room was like the first one. I saw like Catch That Kid. I saw a couple of the films she was in, and I was like, she's a pretty good actress. I feel like this is a young kid who's probably going to grow up to do bigger things. And as she got older, I was like, oh yeah, still good. And then Twilight happened and I was just like, oh man. And I really just, I had this idea of like, I don't like Kristen Stewart, because again, like you're fitting this idea of what you should be as you're obsessively watching Twilight. And then like, yeah, there's a spin that happened. And I think it was before Charlie's Angels for me, even, because Charlie's Angels, I think, helped solidify it. But I don't even remember what specifically it was, but it was something, maybe an interview or like SNL, something.
Her SNL stuff is great.
And I was just like, yo, I really like her. And like Charlie's Angels, like the trailer solidified it is where it was for me. And like everything she's done, like, yeah, I definitely have like the biggest like crush on her, but also like the like admiration. It's very weird, like my relationship with Kristen Stewart at this point, but like to the point where some who know, and again who are part of the Discord as we do D&D, one of my characters, like my main character, was straight up based a lot around like Kristen Stewart and her fashion sense. Even I literally used Kristen Stewart as references for showcasing what my character is wearing on a normal day. So it's really interesting. And the other one too for that is Robert Pattinson. I was introduced, I would say, to him in Twilight, and it was very much just like, oh, this guy sucks. And did not like him for the longest time. But then again, like, I think knowing also the back stuff, like, because nobody hates Twilight the way the Twilight cast hates Twilight.
It's true.
So, yeah, yeah. Knowing that really also like helped fuel me to like really enjoy it, because it's like that moment of like, oh, they knew what they were doing. And you kind of respect that. And like now too, like I know people were like mad that he's going to be Batman. And I'm like, what are you kidding me? Did you even see Twilight?
Right.
Of course he's Batman.
There's a lot of similarities there. like when he growls just a lot. Like both
growls,
characters
he's playing
growl.
The piano. Like I'm like, he's Bruce Wayne. He's Batman. He's set. He's fine. He's going to be great. Like relax, everyone. And so like there's that stuff to it as well. Now, like not every actor in Twilight is phenomenal, obviously, but there's a lot more in there and a lot of enjoyment. I saw the movies the first time through like Riff Tracks, right? And that's how I watched it. Riff Tracks, for those who don't know, are essentially like the same guys who used to do Mystery Science Theater, would essentially do like shows about like modern day movies. And they record tracks you could play while you're watching it, where they do the talking over and make jokes. It's very funny. And I love the Twilight ones. And I like was like, that's the only way I'm going to watch Twilight is with Riff Tracks. And I did it like once. And then every other time after that, I was just watching Twilight. And I've seen them a few times. And I've seen the, again, I've seen the last one, Breaking Dawn Part 2, like several times. Because that to me is a masterpiece for so many reasons. But yeah, there is a lot of hate. And I understand it and I still get it. I'm not going to be blind and I'm not going to like not talk about some of the dumb stuff that happens. But it's like a fun dumb. And I think that's where it's going to be on this. Like, I'm acknowledging like, look, these aren't good. But like, I can acknowledge they're not good, but I'm watching them because they're entertaining right now. And I think that's okay. You're allowed to be entertained by something if it's, even if it's dumb and bad. But more than I think anything in terms of like the merit of Twilight and what Stephenie Meyer clearly did that made it so powerful is that she really, we talked about young adult tapping into something, right? Something we experienced, something we felt, something we went through that we identify with. And I think more than almost any other young adult that had come out, she tapped into emotions that I think young women were feeling and older women remembered feeling that weren't expressed and shown in fiction before. And so, you know, yeah, Bella isn't much of a character, but like it was a lot of insertion to a point of author self-insertion. But like you can fill in yourself in that, you see yourself in that role. There's this life and experience that you wanted to have or that you felt like you wanted to have. And she really captured that for a lot of people. The same way that like guys like fantasy because we want to imagine ourselves as a hero and want to imagine ourselves as a badass. And women also want this as well. I'm not trying to gender this or classify this, but you know, I think that's where the tapping into worked. And obviously as it grew, the fan base grew and more people tapped into it and people of all different types read it and like connected to it in various ways. The impact of this thing is meteoric. It's huge. It's a huge impact that this franchise made.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, underestimate Twilight at your own peril, right? Like it's a huge phenomenon in our culture. Like people who have never seen these movies, never seen these books, know who these characters are. They know about sparkly vampires. Like it's a thing that permeated the broader culture at the time. And still, you know, we can feel that impact. I think the thing that I saw that really made me kind of stop and think when I was reading, you know, I was reading up about reviews at the time and people's kind of take, and the thing that I thought that really stood out was this idea of chaste love, right? And so it's, you know, Stephenie Meyer is a Mormon and she inserts a lot of her beliefs into these books. And, you know, we'll get into the details of that and all of the reasons why it makes me furious. But I think that for young, you know, preteen, teenage girls, like this is, despite the fact that this is a book about a guy who like is doing his best to not murder his girlfriend, it still feels safe in a lot of ways. Like the chastity of this whole thing, I think, lets girls start to like explore those feelings and remember that time in their life where all of that felt scary and it's big and it's hard. And it kind of dumbs down in this way that is more accessible. And I think that it is part of why this franchise is so popular. I think older women remember that time in their life when, you know, everything was kind of scary and new. And so it was nice to just kind of take things little baby steps at a time and you're holding hands and, oh my gosh, that's the biggest deal in the world. And, you know, girls at that age can kind of think like, oh, this is an unattainable idea of a romance for me. It doesn't have to be an adult thing yet, because this is very much like not necessarily at that level that might be too scary. I think that there was this really kind of interesting moment where I was like, oh, I think that, you know, there's a lot of complexity in relationships and this relationship has none of that, right? Like they love each other. Only Edward's thirst for her blood can bring them apart. And it's simple and easy. And I think that that is something that a lot of women really enjoyed. And so I think that that's why, especially for women, this franchise was maybe so huge.
Yeah, and I think, you know, where it gets wonky especially is some of that. I mean, like you mentioned the Mormonism, and I think that really plays into some of the more questionable choices that are made and things like that. And a lot of it is, again, because of society and how they portrayed a lot of stuff, right? Like Edward's stalkerish behavior and romanticism of it is not good, but it's also spawning from like this idea of like chaste women and forbidden guys and like the expansion of that, right? Like a lot of the stuff that are dealt with here, like I said, weren't dealt with previously. So, you know, this is all they, all you got almost. And when all you got is the one thing, you're going to latch onto it for better or for worse. And I think if publishing obviously had made more expanses into this realm beforehand, maybe we wouldn't have gotten some of the more, you know, only Twilight. So therefore the only thing is like possibly dangerous relationships with a psychopath. You know, it could have expanded it out, but that all said, like for the things and the impact it had, also reading this book with like a critical eye and like hilarious eye, boy oh boy, there is some hilarity to be had in just the writing and some of the phrases and sentences. I know there's a couple we had wanted to call out, and we'll get more into like specifics obviously per movie as we go, but like the one that I never forget. For me personally, we talked about this, I think, you know, personally, but like, got to do it here on the podcast, is when they're at dinner and it's right after, I believe, the encounter with the guys. Bella didn't want to eat food. And the line was she wasn't hungry because her stomach was already full of butterflies.
Yeah. Dot, dot, dot. Of butterflies.
Killed me. I am deceased and back from the dead to do this podcast because I needed to talk about that line specifically. It's so wild. It's so wild and so insane, but at the same time, brilliant. Like, that's such a crazy, brilliant line that it stupefies me that someone thought of it. It went into print and made it. And I'm just like, holy crap. Like, I don't know. Like, that's what I mean. I don't know if it's stupid or genius. And it's a little bit of both, which is sort of what this franchise is.
Yeah. And, you know, like, I don't want my previous statement to get misconstrued. I have a lot of very strong objections to the portrayals of the romantic relationships in these books. And we're going to get into them.
Yes.
I have some very strong rants. But there's also some just like very stupid moments that come out of this. My favorite is the khaki skirt. And, you yes. know, thank you, Catherine, in the Discord for bringing this up, because it's I reread the first two books kind of in preparation for this. And I read this line and I just laughed. But it didn't hit me in the sense that like anybody else would necessarily find this funny. And then it got brought up in the Discord and we started talking about it, where, you know, Bella's on the way to go meet Edward's parents, quote unquote, for the first time. And she puts on, you know, a long khaki skirt and a blue blouse. And Edward is just like salivating over this. And it's like, because it's the most enticing outfit she could possibly be wearing, is this long khaki skirt. And I just, it's stuff like this that makes me think like, yeah, this is very funny to read. And it's not intentionally funny, but no, it's very funny.
Because like, that's the thing, right? This is what we're talking about, like the Mormon part of it, because like, to an extent, oh yeah, that's super enticing for a very specific group of people. And that's hilarious. It's hilarious to think like that outfit is what's going to get this 100-something-year-old vampire really going, which is just insane. It's insane. There's like stuff like that. There's of course like the classic, you know, from the movie Hang On Spider Monkey, which just like makes me crack up. There's just all these little bits and pieces that happen that are just really, really hilariously ridiculous. And so the lion or the lamb fell in love with the lion. Stupid lion.
Yeah, and then it's like sad masochistic lion or lamb or whatever. Anyway, yeah, it's all dumb. My favorite is because Bella names, this is all very spoilery, by the way, I'm assuming everyone has seen all of this.
Yeah, if you're listening to this and you haven't experienced Twilight for the first time, I mean, either you're fine with the spoilers or like, I don't know what you're doing here.
Yeah, like, if you care, pause now. Go watch them, or come back. This is not a franchise that you... I don't know. I'm not concerned. Anyway, Bella has a daughter, names her the stupidest name ever, and then...
Yes.
The werewolf that imprinted on her and is now, like, claiming ownership of her calls her Nessie because it's a much less stupid name than Renesmee. And she goes, "You named my daughter after the Loch Ness Monster?" And it's like, yes, yeah, he did. Because that is still a less stupid name than what you named your daughter.
What you chose. Yes. Yes. I love that scene. And, like, that's the Kristen Stewart thing, too, right? Because I remember her screaming that line at Taylor Lautner in the movie and just being like, brilliant. Just excellently done. Yeah, that's what I mean. Breaking Dawn Part 2. Chef's kiss. And, like, so I really feel like if you've been listening to us this long, too, you're going to get the idea here of what we're going to go for. Like, we're not going to be here to be praising Twilight. So if you are Twilight fans coming in, I am sorry that I might be causing you ire by saying this because I know how dangerous that can be. But, like, we're going to be making a lot of jokes, a lot of cracks about it. And it's going to be fun because I think that's the key thing is even as we're, like, tearing some of this stuff apart, it's going to be a fun time. And that's what we're here to do, especially with this franchise, is to have a real good time laughing and talking about it, hit some of the merits of some of the interesting things, discuss, you know, how it could have improved, where it could have gone. And of course, again, like, the impact of the things that came out of this, like we said, not only did it change the genre, but, like, you have stuff like essentially, you know, 50 Shades, which is started as Twilight fan fiction, which became its own thing. And for everyone who says, like, Twilight's the bottom, I got bad news for you. It ain't.
We're not covering 50 Shades. I'm calling that right now. They're not young adult, and I can't handle it.
Nope. No, thank you. The worst is, like, talk about, like, that's not, like, shame read. It's so weird with 50 Shades because, like, where we're talking about Twilight was, like, shame reading almost. 50 Shades was almost, like, proudly displayed in places for some people for me. And I was like, that's weird. It's like you're, like, leaving it out here to be like, that's right, I'm reading 50 Shades. And I'm like, I don't want to know that. And I don't know how I feel about knowing that. It is the reverse effect. Anyway, but yeah, we're going to have, I think, a lot of fun with this stuff. And so we really hope that you join us along here. Before we get into that, just broad spectrum too. Do you have a favorite of the books and a favorite of the movies?
So I, in my reread, because I am nothing if not an overly prepared podcaster, as anyone who listens to the Mighty Ducks probably knows, I have reread the first two. I enjoy the second one because Edward isn't in it very much. So I actually really enjoy New Moon because I enjoy friendship. And even though, you know, the Bella and Jacob friendship is also really weird, I just think, like, team werewolves, I play one in D&D. Like, clearly this is where my loyalty lies. And yeah, Edward is, like, barely in the first two-thirds of the book, and that is enjoyable for me. So that is, I think, my favorite. Although it's been a while since I've read Breaking Dawn, so I will not make a firm claim until I get all the way through.
Yeah, well, I feel like New Moon has a pretty strong running. I have a lot of problems with New Moon, basically because of the ending, which is where Edward comes back in. It's hard to say, like, Eclipse might be it for me, but it might be Eclipse because it's the least offensive almost. This is where it gets odd because there's, like, bits and pieces that I like. I like sometimes when they do the backstory of the characters that aren't, you know, Edward, for example, like, finding more out more about, like, Alice and oh my God, how am I blanking on his name right now? Alice's husband.
Oh my gosh, I'm reading.
Right? this is insane that this is happening right now. But
it also starts with a J, right? But it's not Jacob. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I'm sorry, everybody.
I know. This is ridiculous. So, anyways, we're about to talk. We just talked all about our professionalism, about knowing, you know, all these young adult stuff. And we can't even remember this side character who had 5 lines in the movie, unfortunately, which is really one of the saddest things. But anyway, I like learning the backstory of those characters, right? Like, Rosalie was interesting.
Jasper,
thank you.
I knew it was a J name.
Yeah, was interesting. Those are the type of things that I really liked. And we got a lot of that in Breaking Dawn, but we had a lot of also bad stuff in Breaking Dawn. So I think, like, just out of that, Eclipse might default into my favorite. For the movies, again, by far and away, it's Breaking Dawn Part 2. I think no question there. I don't know if you have a favorite film before we dive into those.
It's been too long since I've seen them. I promise to rewatch. I've kind of been saving that until I get through the books, and then I'll watch the movies. So I don't really remember, but I do. Yeah, I think you're right that I have less rants about Eclipse than I do every other one, right? Like, I think that the like problematic relationships, Bella's like inability to be a human, functional human being without a man by her side, are less present somehow in that book. The cultural appropriation is still really there, which is something we'll definitely talk more about. The like abusive-y, controlling, stalkery relationship that they have is still there, but like, I don't know, that she doesn't like give birth to a demon baby because sex is evil, right? Like, there's, I don't know. Maybe Eclipse is the least problematic in my mind. So yeah, we'll see. I'll let you all know.
Yeah, it's funny because Eclipse also, it is that, because it is the one where Jacob and Edward are more both present, and you definitely see the rivalry between them like come out in sometimes forceful ways. Because I believe, isn't Eclipse the one where he also destroys Jacob's, or destroys her car when she's like, I'm going to go see Jacob, and then puts it back together again?
Which is like classic abusive relationship behavior, right? Like, I'm cutting you 100%. Off from loved one. Like, there's some really bad stuff in these books. Like, I don't want any of our like mocking or enjoyment of the franchise to like take away from the like very serious like domestic abuse themes throughout these books. Like, they are very prevalent, and it's
reiterate that in serious ways for sure. We're also going to laugh about a lot of the insanity of it, but that's going to be the weird podcast feel for the next few weeks, because there's going to be a lot of laughter, a lot of seriousness, a lot of just like what the hell, you know, like confusion, as we're, you know, again, breaking down the big question of just like, just why, eh? and so we really hope you join us in this. We really hope that you follow along in this journey that we're starting here on the Post-Show Recaps Patreon. Again, this first episode, I hope you all really enjoyed it. It gives you a taste of what we'll be doing. We'll also, again, be diving in deeper, so there'll be a lot more hilarity to be had as we go movie by movie is the way we're approaching this, because, you know, it's much easier for people to just watch the movie. We'll be talking about the books. So first episode...
I will do that so that none of you have to. It's okay.
First episode following this, we are, of course, doing the first movie of the Twilight Saga, just called Twilight. And we'll be watching the film, discussing it, coming your way. I'm trying to think if there's any other things to you all to hit. If you want to, if you want to listen, patreon.com/postshowrecaps, $5 level, will get you access to this podcast, which should be reason enough. But of course, there's tons of other podcasts on there that we do for our Patreon feed that you can check out, and we really, really hope you do. But before we go, you know, as I said, there's a lot of ways that we'll be discussing stuff, but we did want to stop down for a more serious topic, especially considering what we'll be talking about in Twilight. As Melissa mentioned, cultural appropriation that happens in there. There's some stuff going on in Canada, and I'm going to hand it over to Melissa right now to talk a little bit about that. Take it away.
Thanks, Kevin. So yeah, if anyone listening is unaware, and, you know, I know we have quite a large non-Canadian audience, there's recently, within the last couple of weeks, there has been a lot of searching of residential school sites within Canada, and a lot of really devastating results have come from that. I think that if anyone listening to here is unaware of the history of residential schools within Canada, it's horrific. It's genocide. It's an attempt to assimilate Indigenous people, and basically, it was horrific. And I can't speak strongly enough as to the horror that is being unearthed in our country right now. And it's it's not news to anybody that was aware of this. Nobody gets to be surprised at what is happening right now. But I do think that it, at least the scale that we're experiencing this at, is perhaps opening some eyes. And I really hope that it's something that is being talked about outside of Canada as well. You know, I want our country to be held accountable for the evils that have happened. And I want people to be talking about this. So that's why we're talking about it on this podcast. You know, there is some significant cultural appropriation within this franchise, and we'll talk more about that as we get into it. And so that's part of why I also felt like there was this tie. And, you know, being a very blatantly Canadian half of this podcast, I didn't feel great not bringing this up. So my encouragement to anyone listening is to, you know, I'm kind of speaking around the bush a little bit, just to be sensitive to anyone listening who has been personally impacted by this. But if you don't know what's going on, I encourage you to Google it. I encourage you to look up what the residential schools and the horrors that went with them in Canada. Look up the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Read it. If you're Canadian, especially, I encourage you to read it. These are the actions that we need to be taking, that our government and our academic institutions and all of our big infrastructures within our country need to take in order to take meaningful action to try to do anything to make up for, not that they can never be made up for, but to try to do any sort of change within our country. You know, we've got Canada Day coming up, and I think that I really encourage people to read and educate and donate. I want to shout out the Indian Residential School Survivors Society is a great place to start. There, you can go to their website, www.irss, so that's 3 S's, irss.ca, and offer a donation. You know, whatever you might normally spend on a Canada Day celebration, I think is maybe a great suggested amount. But I couldn't do this podcast and not bring this up. And I just really, I'm open to starting this conversation and having it with people, because I think that it's my responsibility to do that as someone who is an uninvited guest on the lands of the Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Musqueam people in what we call Vancouver. So thank you, Kevin, for letting me talk about that. I don't know if you have anything else you want to say, but
yeah. Oh, no, I mean, for me, you know, I was unaware, so I'm thankful for you to bring it up, because it, you know, I was able to do some reading about it myself and like learn about those sort of atrocities. Of course, I live in America, where we have our own, you know, set of horrors that has been committed upon here, and it is something that we do want to talk about, and especially with this franchise we'll be delving into. You know, you will be shouting out a few more charities and stuff and things that you can donate to, and like I mentioned, YA is really interesting because you have a lot of like great stuff that are memorable, but you unfortunately have some stuff and authors who wrote them who unfortunately aren't the best of people, as we have discovered. And so when we're talking about certain things and certain stuff, we do want to try to do as much as we can to also offset that. So this is really great because of something that's a horror that's happening now. It's a great way for us to hopefully educate some people on it and hopefully get some donations out there. So if you can, please do, you know, donate, do what you can to research and read about it, and continue to join us, you know, each week as we talk about this franchise, Twilight, and delving into hopefully a lot more afterwards. As long as you guys follow along, we'll be very happy. So thank you for tuning into this first episode. And if you have any feedback, if you have any questions, if you have anything you'd like us to talk about specifically, write in to Kevin at postshowrecaps.com. That's directly to me. I can get all that feedback. I can bring it out in the podcast and talk about it, whatever specific Twilight topics you want and have, anything hilarious from the specific movie or from that book that you want us to bring up and discuss, throw it out there. And anything that you also would like us to do as like a fun thing, because one thing I think we're going to do that we talked about is, who are we each movie team blank? It doesn't necessarily mean Edward or Jacob, but who are we liking the most in each film? Who are we standing? We joke that there's only one answer, and it very well might be this person, every single one. But let us know as well. Like, who are you teaming each movie? What are some other fun things like that you'd like us to do? We are happy to do it and happy to discuss it. Thank you so much for joining us this week. Hopefully see you all next week as we delve into the first film in the Twilight franchise. Until then, see you later, eh?
Bye.